Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi.
And I'm Lisa, and today we're looking at a book that sounds like the the author needs like a nap and a hug and, I don't know, maybe a weighted blanket.
Yeah, it's Ecclesiastes. The preacher starts out like, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Basically, everything is meaningless.
Yeah, that's a happy story, really uplifting. I'd like to take that to my friends for Sunday brunch, you know.
Do you do brunch?
And, you know, I used to. In the big city.
Brunch is kind of fun.
I like brunch. I actually really like brunch.
Yeah,
it's kind of the right time. It's not.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah. You're not rushed. You're not like getting there. Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's also like the worst birthday card ever, right? Every year, meaningless. Nobody makes it out alive. Happy birthday, Ecclesiastes.
No. Yeah, it's. It looks dark, but here's the thing. It's not despair. It's really, I think, really an honest look at life under the sun without God in the picture.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so powerful, I think, because Solomon shows us that if this life is all that there is, everything ends up feeling empty.
Yeah, and he does it by walking down two roads, two paradoxes, we're calling them. One is the paradox that knowledge without God increases sorrow. That's what he says in Ecclesiastes 1, 12, I think, through 18. He ends like, it just brings about sorrow, grief. And then there is paradox number two, because he goes from like all this knowledge that he's gained, he goes into pleasure. Really, like, he had enough money and enough resources to have all the pleasure in the world. And he kind of comes to this place of the paradox that pleasure can thrill you, but it can't fulfill you.
Yeah, that's nice. Let's talk about the first one. Knowledge without God increases sorrow. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven.
And then he says in verse 18, for in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow.
I really like that word, vexation.
I was just going to say, do you use that word?
It's a great word. I'm vexed. It's a fantastic word.
What does it mean?
Yeah. I think it's like filled with angst and anger at the same time. Sadness, anger, angst, all wrapped up into one glorious word.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good word. It's like the more that he learned, Solomon, the heavier everything felt.
Yeah, and he's showing us that what I like to call it really basic humanism, trying to fix the world just by getting smart. Like, if I just get enough education, I can solve all of the problems.
Yeah, humanism is a way of thinking that says we can fix the problems, we can think our way out of the mess. The box is, no problem is too big for human ingenuity and rationality. And the thing is, you can diagnose the problem, but you can't actually fix it. And Solomon says, what's crooked can be made straight, and what's lacking cannot be counted.
Yeah, what's crooked, what's broken. So I think what he's kind of saying, or what he's getting at, or what he's diagnosing, is really you can see the problem. Like, right? Like, you can see that the world is broken, that the world is not the way it should be. Sadly... You know, last week we saw the brokenness of the world where you can't share your political views. And it's just broken. And how do you fix that? And we all run around going, this is how we're going to fix it. This is how we're going to fix it. But really, knowledge, what it does is it diagnoses the problem, but it doesn't cure it. Knowledge without God just shows you how broken things are. And it leaves you stuck there. And it brings on sorrow.
Well, yeah, and you can't, the trouble too is you can't fix it. Like, so you not only can you, like, don't you have the cure, but all of the methods that you would apply are woefully inadequate. Stephen Hawking, like, brilliant, right, physicist, he even admits this after all of his theories about the universe, right? He says, what is it that breathes fire into the equations and makes a universe for them to describe? He didn't know.
Right. Right. He's saying, even if we figure out how everything works.
Yeah.
We still can't answer why it exists. Like, why is it here? Like, what is it for? What is the purpose? So it can answer maybe a little bit of the, it can answer some things, but it can't answer, the why of what, of anything.
Well, yeah. And that is the question that we often find ourselves asking, right? Why me? What's this all for? What's the purpose? Why am I here? And Ecclesiastes, right, Solomon gives us an indication. He says that God has set eternity in the human heart, and that longing for why is actually built into us.
Yeah, and the only answer for eternity can only be answered not by knowledge, not by pleasure, but only by God. And that's the paradox. The more you know without God, the more sorrow you feel, the more heavy it feels, the more vexation.
Nice.
That you feel because you see the cracks, but you have no real way to fix them.
Yeah, that's actually good news because it explains why knowledge won't give you peace, right? Or anything really that you might put in that bucket, right? Knowledge or things or relationships or whatever.
Have you ever had like a moment where like you've read a few books, at least one more than your students?
Okay.
As a former professor, have you ever had a moment where you've seen knowledge just lead to more frustration?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm actually thinking of as far as myself, I have had a lot of those moments where I read the books and I try to think about the answers and imagine ways to fix social problems. But the more that I read and the more that I observed, the more obvious the problem was and the reality that I could read 100 more books and still not fix the problem. And the people who wrote the 100 books hadn't actually fixed the problem. They just described a mess that had been there long before they wrote the book.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this weird cycle. And it's not meaning like knowledge isn't good or study like, oh, well, it's all meaningless. Let's just be done. Because later he talks about knowledge and folly, and he's like wisdom and folly, I think is the words that he uses. And so wisdom comes from knowledge, and but the folly part, so he's saying just being like ignorant isn't the answer either. And he actually says it's actually worse to be in that ignorant space, but he really describes knowledge as not the thing that just solves the problem.
Yeah.
And so after knowledge fails him, Solomon kind of runs down a different road. And he runs down this big road of pleasure.
Which is paradox number two that we talked about at the beginning, yep. Right?
And pleasure can thrill you, but it really can't fulfill you. And that's what he gets to.
Yeah, he says, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. And he does a lot of things. But behold, this was also vanity.
Yeah, and he goes all in, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, man, I'm going to find, like, just laughter. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be good. That's good. That's what's going to satisfy.
He's like on the Comedy Central circuit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when you, like, you come home from work and you just watch sitcoms. Mm-hmm. You're just like, ah, and for that moment, it's good, right? It kind of numbs things. But then, you know, after the ninth episode that you watched in a row, you're like, I probably should do something.
Yeah.
My kids are tearing up the house.
Right? What's going on?
Yeah. And so you have to come back to reality. Then he goes, you know what? I'm going to try alcohol or wine. And so he drinks too much wine. He becomes intoxicated. And I think that too is just like a numbing mechanism, right? Like it does push you away from what you know for just a moment, but then,
then you wake up and you're like, oh, yeah. It hasn't gone anywhere.
Now you have the knowledge and the headache, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes into building projects and he builds gardens and parks. Think about that. Do you know anyone who owns their own park?
No, I don't.
No, like realtors will say a park-like setting, but they don't really own a park.
No, right? No. I imagine when he says that, like Versailles, right? In giant palace and all these beautiful gardens, and that's what he was, right. King with the palace and the gardens.
And so he has wealth, he has entertainment. He goes down the road of relations in the biblical sense. He has, I think it says he has 700 wives.
Jeez.
And 300 concubines. And
lots of choices.
I mean, just over and over. Fame has it. And the problem, I think, or the tension, is that knowledge kept coming back in. And so pleasure was there, and it's satisfied for a moment. It's satisfied just for a moment, but then it couldn't sustain the satisfaction.
Yeah, verse 10 in Ecclesiastes 2 is crazy. It says, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Like, he is the original go big or go home guy, right? Like, nothing that he withheld from himself in his pursuit of meaning, right? Making meaning in this life.
Well, I think he's also the right guy to do this too, right? Because he's the one who could do it.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's very few people who could say, 99.9999%
could not do what he actually could do because he was so wealthy and he was really smarter than everybody else and he had more of everything, just abundance of everything. And so he could run down those roads pretty far. I know no other man who has 700 wives. No other man.
No. That alone is very expensive.
Yeah.
I
watched a show, though. Sister Wives.
Oh.
That was weird. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there was lots of problems. And there was only like four of them. Yeah. But he could have all of this stuff. And it's almost like one of those little weird mazes, you know how like you as a kid you kind of like go and you there's a starting point and then,
like the dinner menus or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and then like if you go this way there's a dead end, but you can kind of find the way or the route or whatever, and you get to the middle or whatever. It's like he ran all of those. He's like, oh, I'll run over here after alcohol. Oh, I'll run over here after building projects, and he keeps hitting these dead ends. Over and over and over again. And what he says in verse 11 is this: then I considered all that my hands had done, and behold, all of it was vanity, which simply means meaningless. It means it's like a vapor, a breath. It's here and then gone. It doesn't satisfy. It's like chasing after a laser pointer light. You can't really catch it. Even if you feel like you grasp it, you can't grab it. It's popping a bubble in your hand from, you know, a bubble machine type thing. And he says it's all vanity, all meaningless, and it's a striving or a chasing after the wind.
Yeah, so that's the paradox. Pleasure can thrill you, but it will never fulfill you.
Yeah, it's kind of like cotton candy. I love me some cotton candy. Oh, I love that stuff.
I like McDonald's french fries. We've actually discussed that before.
Yeah. Oh, just it's like sweet for a second, and it's like just going on your mouth, the cotton candy, and then it's gone.
Well, yeah, and sometimes after you are eat, like you put a little bit in your mouth, it gets all like weird and crusty. You know?
I kind of like that.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Oh, gross. Well, you know, Tim Keller said, instead of admitting we're on the wrong road, we convince ourselves we just haven't gone far enough yet, right? The addict will say, just one more drink, right? The workaholic will say, just 12 more hours.
Right.
Right. You know?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the book, I think, of Ecclesiastes. We say that, but if we just read this and really saw what he did, what Solomon did, if I had, you know, more success, more stuff, more relationship, but Solomon already said, I've already ran that road farther than you can ever imagine, and I will tell you where it ends. It's a chasing after the wind. They all end the same way. And it's almost like he puts, if you think about that maze again, he puts a big red X, like, don't go this way, don't go this way, don't go this way. And really, he's pointing us to something.
Well, yeah, and Jesus takes it actually even deeper. Right? In Matthew, he says, anybody who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery in his heart.
Yeah, and I think it's a really pointing to the same thing. Like, God wants our heart. God wants, he's set eternity on our hearts. And so what is the only thing that can satisfy us is that which is eternal, right? And so our hearts get all messed up and that we desire, we run after. If I just had this, And what Jesus is saying is even those things that are just in your heart in that way is really a chasing after the wind.
Yeah, emptiness is where you get what you get.
Yep, you will always end there. And so paradox, I think, or of pleasure is, I think we have to kind of unpack that just a little bit more. Why is pleasure fails? And then what is it really for?
Yeah, so why does God even give us pleasure in the, if it can't satisfy us? Right? What is its purpose?
Yeah, so I think it can satisfy us, and I think he says that. Like, some of these things were good times, right? Like, that's a Levi paraphrase of verse 10. But, like, yeah, I had all of this, and yet it didn't ultimately satisfy me. Because pleasure, I don't think, was ever meant to satisfy us a sustained satisfaction. It was only meant to point us to God.
Yes, C.S. Lewis said, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world.
And, man, that's just really good, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
If you sit and just ponder that for a moment. Pleasure is like a road sign. It's beautiful, but it's not the destination.
Well, yeah, and it, when it disappoints us, because it will, right? That's not God being mean. It's actually his kindness, his mercy. He's saying, hey, don't stop here, right? Don't, you're out and having fun, but don't stop there. Come home. Come back.
Yeah. Come to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quit chasing this stuff that's not going to do what it you think it's going to do. Come to me, because I'm the one. I'm the bread of life. I'm the one who gives you, quenches your thirst in such a way. I am the life. And Ecclesiastes says that life under the sun, but God sits enthroned above the sun, and the only eternal can satisfy eternity. And that's God. Like, only God can satisfy eternity. And it is set upon our hearts that we would be in connection and in relationship to him.
Well, yeah. And I think just, you know, in my own experience, one of the things that I ran after was philosophy. And that's why I love the book of Ecclesiastes. So many great questions. But philosophers have asked these questions and they always come up short. And I think for me, the pleasure of the really intellectual conversation and the idea and all of those, which actually ended up in sort of an arrogant echo chamber, I guess you could say. But the ideas were never ideas of eternity, because there wasn't life in them. And they ended with Nietzsche and nihilism and meaninglessness, as Solomon describes. And so life under the sun can be incredibly despairing. But God in his mercy does sit enthroned above the sun, and truly it only he can satisfy.
Yeah, and the best part is that God came for us and said, hey, I'm not just going to give you, you know, just hand us a map.
Leave us there, right?
Right? Like,
figure it out.
Yeah, good luck to you. No, he says, no, here's the map, and here I am. And I am, like, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. And he goes, basically, he doesn't say these words, but he says, I know your hearts are homesick. And what are they homesick for? For me, that which is eternal.
Yeah, so if you're weary or disappointed, hey, maybe that's just Jesus lovingly standing in your, not maybe, it probably, it is Jesus standing in your way saying, that is not the path. Come to me.
Yeah, Psalm 16:11 says, "In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore."
Well, yeah, right. And Jesus also says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, because my burden is easy and light." And that it's the weight of the world under the sun is heavy. But Jesus does this very, he says, "Come to me, in my presence there is joy. And with me you will find rest from the toilsome weariness of the world." It's not fleeting, right? It's lasting.
Yeah. So the good news is this. You don't have to keep chasing the wind. You know, these things of like making money, and some of you might be thinking, "Oh, like, oh, I got to make money. I got to build my new sauna." You know, those types of things.
I'm not thinking that, but
that's what I was thinking about. And those things are, I don't think it's wrong to want and to have those desires. I think it what Ecclesiastes continues to point to us is it's only wrong when we believe it's going to be the thing that satisfies us and we void God from the life that he wants for us.
Yeah, it can't be the end point.
No, no. Yeah. And so Jesus gives meaning. Jesus gives joy. Jesus gives rest now and forevermore.
So that's the paradox, right? Knowledge can bring sorrow and pleasure can thrill you, but it's not ever going to fulfill you.
But Jesus satisfies the eternity in your heart.
That's good news you can use. Thanks for tuning in with us. If you've got questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to office@evangelup.org. If you'd like, you can catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes by searching Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform, or go to our website, evangelup.org.